Chapter 35, Reflection. Antonio came from a place that was at the time deemed a third world country, yet, like Sidney Poitier, he knew exactly who he was when he came to the U.S. The Uribes were revered in the community, with streets, businesses, and even a college named after the family. Yet, Antonio chose to move to another country, leaving his family, facing a language barrier and racism. I have often wondered if that was because he was the black sheep and was ready to get a fresh start, not unlike what the cradle promised Leela when she relinquished me. Although my Uncle Clay remembered meeting Julio, he never said he was embraced by the family. He was too kind to point out the obvious, but it was clear that he understood why I was destined to be relinquished to the cradle. He knew his sister had struggled deeply and wanted to both protect her and help me. Leela told me that she would have kept me had her high school boyfriend, a white man, been my father. It was shocking to hear, but I had always suspected I had the wrong father in her family's eyes, and she confirmed that belief. It seems that she both wanted to know me, yet also wanted to keep me at bay, terrified I may learn the truth. Whether she loved or hated Antonio, it was impossible for Leela to look at me or her grandson Matt and not see Antonio looking back, triggering the memories from so long ago. It has taken more than a decade and having the support of the adoption community before I could finally understand why the reunion with Leela gutted me. I see now that I wrestled with the divide between my fantasy birth mother and my real-life birth mother. I wanted her to really know and understand me. I wanted to really know and understand her, yet neither of us were in a place to accomplish that. Knowing both my parents' identities has finally filled the empty ache inside my soul. I no longer have to fantasize best or worst-case scenarios. This knowledge allows me to partake in genealogy, a hobby that until very recently I could not participate in. For most of my life, I had zero interest in my adoptive family's genealogy, but now that I have discovered my original identity, I embrace both my adoptive and biological genealogy, maintaining trees for all sides and managing multiple DNA accounts. In addition, I enjoy paying it forward like the search team did for me, helping those of unknown parentage discover their roots. I find so much peace and wholeness in finally having a narrative that surrounds my formerly mysterious origins. Although I am different in many ways from my biological and adoptive parents, I can now stand back and view all of them from a wider lens. I see glimpses of myself and my children in each of them, a never-ending braid of nature and nurture that one day will continue to the next generation. Sometimes late at night, I log into Ancestry and gaze into the faces of my ancestors, many of whom I never knew while I walked this earth, silently thanking them for ushering their gifts forward and for their continued love and guidance from the other side. Epilogue, November 13th, 2021. I had just dumped 3 cups of oatmeal into a metal bowl intending to make pumpkin muffins when I saw my phone light up with a number I did not recognize. Who could be calling me from Wyoming? I asked out loud. Then it hit me. It had to be Jim O'Donnell, the man who flew Antonio into the country. I had been researching him on and off for months, trying to determine his most recent address. Was he still alive? I had not located an obituary for him. Creating a small tree, I examined every green leaf hint from his high school graduation to current time. He would be about 88 years old. Once I knew his middle initial and the name of his wife, it enabled me to try a more accurate Google search. I found him in Illinois and later Wyoming, yet none of the phone numbers were good at either location. Hoping the Wyoming address was current, I mailed him a letter asking if he would give me a call to discuss his memories from 60 years ago. I quickly ran down the stairs to my basement office and answered the call. I needed my laptop. Lynn? Yes? Jim O'Donnell. I received your letter. I could not believe I was speaking to this man who had over a short amount of time developed into a mythological giant in my mind. So, what would you like to know about Tony? I can tell you he was born into a privileged family. His brother was a general in the Peruvian army, he stated matter-of-factly. I like how he gets right to the point. I went into interview mode, explained how I knew about him, and soon learned that Jim had tested his DNA at Ancestry and that his daughter had created a tree for the O'Donnells. He likes genealogy. I breathed a sigh of relief. No mention of my being adopted, which I shared in the letter. No shock or opinions related to how I learned Tony was my father. Jim stated that he already had his real estate license, insurance brokerage license, and his pilot license before graduating college. I was a bit of an overachiever, he joked. Although I would have preferred to hear the story from my father's lips, I was feeling very grateful to be hearing it at all. Jem had an endless array of mind-blowing tales, and his memories were like a steel trap. He was throwing out dates and names off of the top of his head. It was June 1958 when Jem flew his four-passenger 1956 Piper Tri-Pacer into Lima, Peru, paying 1 penny a mile for the Peruvian airspace tax. His wife was with him and 6 months pregnant with their second child. Due to poor visibility, he had to land the plane on the Pan American Highway in Lima. He parked the plane at a gas station, a photo of which made the front page of the Lima newspaper the next day. He encouraged me to try to find the newspaper, giving me the exact week of his landing. "I paid $8,500 for that plane," he exclaimed. I quickly Googled the type of plane he flew. It was a 10-day trip. I shuddered. I love flying, but 10 days on a tiny plane, I don't think I could have done it. I was diligently typing and hanging on to his every word. For the return trip, his scheduled passengers were the same three that flew to Lima with him. His wife, a Swiss professor, and a second guy whose wife was unhappy he made the trip without her. The second guy's wife flew into Lima separately and insisted her husband not return with Jem, which left one available seat. It was this unexpected turn of events which led Tony Uribe to have an opportunity to come to the United States, specifically Joliet, Illinois. But it almost didn't happen. Tony had to go north 100 miles to where he lived to get his passport, and my other passenger wasn't too happy about the delay. I waited for him and charged him $50 for the trip. The guy who left with his wife had already paid, so I gave Tony a discount. Jem shared the specific address at the apartment building he owned in Joliet. Tony lived with us for his first 30 days in Illinois, and we ate dinner together almost every evening. He didn't have any money, but he looked for a job every day. I bought him his first pair of boots. I smiled at the visual of this, asking if he could share anything about his personality. Tony wasn't very tall. He was probably 5'7", and he was very easy to get along with. Never had one problem with him. "Could he speak English well?" I inquired. "Oh, yes, his English was excellent. He reminded me more of a Castilian Spaniard than a Peruvian." I made a note to look up Castilian Spaniards. I was talking to a man who had traveled all around the world. I suddenly felt inadequate for not owning a passport. Tony landed a job in Lockport, Illinois at Material Service Corporation. This company would barge sand, gravel, and cement into Chicago for all of the buildings downtown. We talked for quite a long time. Before we said our goodbyes, Jem shared his email address and stated, "Call me anytime." The next day, I was reviewing my notes and noticed my notation, which read, "We flew into Joliet Airport over the July 4th weekend, 1958. July 4th. Visions of red, white, and blue and celebrations of independence were happening at the same time my father landed here for his very own Independence Day. He had safely arrived in the United States of America, free to start his new life." Digesting all of this was overwhelming, but in a good way. Every time I thought about Tony's decision to get on that plane, I became emotional. I told Mark that I felt like one of those people on Finding Your Roots that just learned something incredible about what imminently resulted in my life. Jem lost touch with Tony during the 1960s, but eventually heard from him once he was working as a professor in Canada. I have some letters from Tony in boxes around here. I just don't know if I will ever get through them before I die. My father was a seeker, an adventurer, a risk taker. He saw the writing on the wall. There was nothing for him in Peru. The youngest of 13, he was in the shadow of his older, successful siblings. He saw an opportunity to leave his homeland, and Jem was his $50 ticket out. Thoughts began swirling. What if Jim's passenger had not decided to leave with his wife? What if my father had not had a passport, or Jem had not given him time to go retrieve it? What if the plane never made it? As Matt and I later pondered this story together, he verbalized the obvious. We wouldn't be here if Tony had not jumped on that plane to the U.S., The butterfly effect was back. One decision made at one moment in time changed everything from there forward. As I thought more about the final pieces of my origin story, a memory came back to me. It was the mid-1970s. I'm around 10 years old, sitting in my childhood basement family room with my record player. My favorite song was Rhinestone Cowboy, and I was playing the 45 over and over. I could not have known it then, but that song was part of my story. My family's lineage. Tony was a rhinestone cowboy. He arrived on a plane in a star-spangled rodeo like millions of other immigrants had before and after him, to the land of opportunity. He arrived with nothing but the good name of his family back home and a boatload of tenacity. And he even had some boots, thanks to Jim.